ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Welcome to this episode of Ain't Misbehaving.
I'm Dr. Louisa, and I'm here to talk about your pets, some problems you may have, and some things you can do. I'm a veterinarian with a special interest in behavior and have been helping people with their pets for over 30 years. My hope is to help you with your own interspecies relationships.
In the last episode, assuming you were brave enough to listen to it, we presented 8 Belgian Tervuren puppies born on October 5th, 2019. Twinkle was the dam, Dylan was the sire. Now I want to talk about the development of those puppies. But first, here's today's bonus question.
Which is correct? 9 and 7 is 15, or 9 and 7 are 15?
Listen to the end for the answer. We often don't think about puppies until we are looking to add them to our family. Astute puppy buyers will ask to see the sire and dam. In Twinkle's case, Dylan's sperm was frozen in liquid nitrogen, and he was no longer available to meet. But often there will be a photo of Dad. The breeder is bound to have a photo. If the breeder is an AKC or American Kennel Club member, there may be a pedigree you could see. It does take some knowledge of the breed and who the dogs are to evaluate the pedigree, but sometimes you can get an idea of the dog by the letters that surround the name. You might see CH, CD, OA, RN, or any of the dozens of titles that mean the dog has performed and won in whatever competition they engage in. The breeders of these dogs take their breed seriously. Other questions may come to mind, like the birth date, what food they are eating, and if the pup could be registered with the AKC. But if you have done your homework, like listening to this program, you might ask the breeder if they did early neurological stimulation and what enrichments were provided to the pups. As we will see, this is needed to make emotionally resilient dogs. I'd like to make an aside and quote something from Robert Sapolsky. He is a neuroendocrinology researcher and a professor of neurology and neurological sciences at Stanford University. A lot of big words, but basically, neuro is the brain and the nervous system, and endocrine is the body's hormones. Two complicated subjects that he makes interestingly understandable. He has wonderful content on YouTube. He is the author of Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers and over 20 other books. He knows his stuff. So he says that conception is about genetics. Everything after that is epigenetics. Epigenetics is all of the environmental factors that act on development, including gestation. These can be things like what the mother is fed and what stress is on the mother. Too much stress on the mother during gestation can affect the pups to the degree that they will be less resilient to stress as adults, and the females can then pass on this trait to future generations. Ugh, yikes. Environmental influences can affect less intense aspects of the pups, too. It has to do with what genes are stimulated to turn on or off at different times. This is prominently illustrated by a cat named Cece. Cece was so named because she was a copycat. She was the first cloned cat. This means that there was no father involved. The DNA was taken from the donor and inserted into a recipient egg cell. Then the egg was transferred into a surrogate mother. Rainbow, her genetic donor, was a calico, meaning that she had orange and black on a white body. Cece, however, was a white and brown tabby. They were both tested and found to have the exact same DNA. So why the dramatic difference in coat color? This is where epigenetics comes in. Environmental factors during gestation will turn on and turn off genes as the fetus develops. The same thing happens with any gestating fetus. A lot of these factors we can't control, but we can control the diet and exposure to toxins and decrease stress. Good breeders know this. Before they are born, pups can sense, to a certain degree, some of their environment. Oxygen levels can vary. Odors in the amniotic fluid can reach a fetus's smell receptors. The fetus can feel vibrations. All of these factors can influence when a certain gene will turn on and turn off. After birth, epigenetics is still in play. Environmental influences continue to impact what is happening as the puppy grows. Too much stress can affect the pup later in life. However, mild stress responses, defined as brief in duration and mild to moderate in magnitude, can help develop stress coping skills. Moderate stress responses result from exposure to experiences that present greater threats, such as lack of stimulation, boredom, or household instability, or illness, injury, or exposure to a natural disaster. As with mild stress responses, when the event occurs in an otherwise safe environment, recovery to normal is likely. Examples of events that can result in severe stress responses include chronic abuse, severe or chronic disease, and adverse early life events like nutritional deprivation, maternal separation, or significant maternal threat. Some dogs are not the best moms. But it has been found that mild stress to puppies can enhance their development and help make them more resilient to stress later in life. I have to stress the word mild. That means I strongly stress the concept of mild stress on puppies. So, how much stress is too much? How much is enough? Well, stress is often defined in terms of stressors, events in the internal and external environment that result in a stress response. Stressors increase the ratio of one's perception of threat to the perception of control. That is, the greater feeling of threat than a feeling of control. That's stressful. The central stress response system can be sensitized by early adverse experiences, which can leave the individual more susceptible to interpret events in the environment as threats. Environmental modifications to reduce the perceptions of threats and enhance the perceptions of control can promote resilience, which can improve health and welfare. This is where mild stress to puppies can help make them more resilient to stress later in life. In the early 1960s, there was a study where newborn kittens were handled for 10 minutes a day and developed 2 to 3 days earlier than the control kittens. This handling effect was also seen when kittens were exposed to cold temperatures and even being shaken in a shoebox. I don't recommend that. But this led to studies on early neurological stimulation in dogs. Further research determined that the optimal age and time for this was once daily from the 3rd to the 16th days, a period believed to be a time of rapid neurological growth and development. Early neurological stimulation, or ENS, requires handling the puppies one at a time while performing a series of 5 exercises. The handler starts with one pup and stimulates it using each of the 5 exercises. The handler completes the series from beginning to end before starting with the next pup. The handling of each pup once a day involves the following exercises, which are all done for only 3 to 5 seconds. One is tactile stimulation. Holding the pup in one hand, the handler gently tickles the pup between the toes on any one foot using a Q-tip. Number 2, a head held erect. Using both hands, the pup is held straight up so that the head is directly above the tail. This is an upwards position. Number 3 is head pointed down. Holding the pup firmly with both hands, the head is reversed and is pointed downward so that it is pointing toward the ground. Number four is the supine position. Hold the pup so that it is on its back, resting in the palm of both hands, with its muzzle facing the ceiling. The pup, while on its back, is allowed to sleep. Number five is thermal stimulation. Using a damp towel that has been cooled in a refrigerator for at least 5 minutes, place the pup on the towel, feet down. Do not restrain it from moving. It is extremely important that you do not repeat the exercises more than once per day and do not extend the time beyond that is recommended for each exercise. Overstimulation of the neurological system can have adverse and detrimental results. The exercises are not a substitution for daily handling and stroking of young puppies. They need to feel loving hands in a secure place. Five benefits have been observed in canines that were exposed to ENS, including improved cardiovascular performance, stronger heartbeats, stronger adrenal glands, more tolerance to stress, and greater resistance to disease. And it was shown that the eyes and ears tend to open earlier, too. Wait, eyes closed? Ears closed? How can a dog close his ears? Well, puppies are born blind and deaf and remain so for the first week or two. The eyes tend to open at 12 to 13 days. They first start to open at the very edge near the nose. The ears open at 20 to 22 days. You can see the pups startle at some sounds. So now the pups are about 3 weeks old, and this is the start of the primary socialization. Once the pup's eyes and ears are open, and they can really begin to explore their environment, the first socialization period begins. This is when the puppies learn how to be dogs, so to speak. They become familiar with all the behaviors that allow them to live and communicate with other dogs, such as different body postures and vocalizations. They also learn how to bite and what it feels like to be bitten. This is an important lesson for puppies to learn when they are young so that they do not hurt other dogs and people when the dogs are an adult. The mother also teaches the pups very important lessons on dog manners. Puppies will also begin to move to specific locations to potty, preferring not to mess up the den or whelping area. You can take advantage of this for house training. Once you see the pups moving to another spot, make this an obvious area semi-separated from the main puppy area. These are things that the breeder should have done to make resilient puppies. So now you have a puppy. What now? As soon as the pup enters your house, he begins to learn and form habits. You can't stop this from happening. Whether or not you're aware of it, every interaction you have with a puppy is a learning session. The puppy's either learning behaviors you consider naughty, or he's learning to be polite, happy, and well-behaved. One very important thing is house training. Take note that I said house training, not house breaking. The first thing to do is to take the puppy out on a schedule. It helps to have a written note of when the pup goes out and whether they pee or poop. There are other things you can do, which I will cover in a separate episode. So now that you have the pup, the secondary socialization period starts. This is from week 6 to week 14. Again, week 14. That's 3 months. So if you got the puppy at 2 months, you pretty much have 1 month to do this section, to do the secondary socialization. This is the period when many of the puppy's experiences have the potential to carry over into an adulthood. The puppy should be exposed to brief and friendly visits from as many different puppy-friendly people and animals as possible. Interacting with only household humans is not enough. The book Perfect Puppy in 7 Days by Sophia Yin has a wonderful information on this secondary socialization. She has a chart that has 5 pages of different things that the puppy should be exposed to. The wonderful thing about this chart is that it also has a way for you to mark your pup's responses from 1 to 5, 1 being over-aroused, and 5 being calm. Number 1 is over-arousal. This is when the pup growls, barks, lunges, or struggles when restrained. Number 2 is avoidance. This is when the pup hides or tries to get away. Number 3 is freezing. This is when the pup holds still but won't take a treat. They may be acting sleepy when they shouldn't be tired. With responses 1 to 3, it is important to go back in the process. Start at a greater distance from the scary thing. Approach more slowly, making sure that the pup will take treats the whole time. Once they are happily taking treats, end the session. Don't overdo it. Number 4 is calm and relaxed. They will explore the environment and respond well to treats. Number 5 is being calm and relaxed, even without food. Some examples of potentially scary things include big people, short people, men, women, people of different races, fast-moving people, and children of varying ages. Clothing, too, is important. Things like hats, hoodies, big boots, canes are all things that can be scary for a dog later in life. These encounters should be brief, lasting no more than 20 minutes, and end on a happy note. This teaches puppies not to fear people and other animals. This is also the period where they can learn to love cats, gerbils, guinea pigs, birds, rabbits, lizards, and any other species that may be available. And by exposing puppies to different surfaces when they are young, we can greatly decrease the likelihood that they will be afraid of walking on a variety of surfaces later in life. And of course, sounds. Thunder, fireworks, traffic, and the ever-scary vacuum cleaner. I got one puppy when he was 6 months, and we, at the time, were living way down on a cliff at the bottom of a long staircase. And I hadn't thought about this, but the breeder lived on a one-level house. So when I got the puppy home and got down the stairs, he never wanted to go back up the stairs. So for the first week that I had him, I had to carry him up those long stairs until he learned that, oh, stairs are okay. And of course, sounds. Be aware that thunder, fireworks, traffic, and the ever-scary vacuum cleaner can be paired with wonderful treats at this stage, and the puppy can lose their fear of them and turn into a very resilient adult during thunderstorms. Puppy's first vet visit should happen during this time too. Your pup will need vaccines at 8 weeks, but you can go in before then just for treats and a puppy party. As I mentioned before, the window for this socialization closes at about 14 weeks, so don't wait. There are also things that can be easy to teach a puppy and that will help them later in life. Body handling can teach a pup that being picked up is fun and that they can love having their feet and toes touched. Nail trim, anyone? Teaching touch is a helpful behavior to move the dog around. Hold out a finger, and when the pup investigates, click and treat. Later in life, when the dog is in your way, hold out a finger and ask for touch, and then move on. Zen attention is a lovely way to teach leave it. Leave it can save a dog's life if they are going for a chicken bone or a puddle of antifreeze. Zen attention goes like this. Hold a treat in your closed hand. The pup can smell it and will poke and nuzzle your hand to get the treat. Just wait. This is the Zen part for you. Say nothing. Don't move your hand away. Then the instant the pup takes his nose off your hand, open your hand and give the treat. As you repeat this exercise, you will notice it takes less and less time for the pup to move away. This is the Zen for the puppy. Ah, to get it, I must give it up. And a very important lesson is learning bite inhibition. Puppies have very sharp teeth, and they need to know that human flesh is quite delicate. When playing with a pup, if you feel teeth, stop playing. Wait a minute or less and start playing again. I will go into detail on these exercises in a future episode. Until then, love your puppy and keep them safe. And now, the answer to the bonus question.
Which is correct? 9 and 7 is 15, or 9 and 7 are 15? Well, neither are correct. 9 and 7 is 16.
You can send your questions to info@radiotacoma.org. Please put "ain't misbehavin'" in the subject line. You can give as much information in the email as you wish. If your question is chosen, I will answer it in detail on the program. Join us again for more sagas from the world of pet behavior problems.
This is Dr. Louisa reminding you,
they ain't misbehaving, they're just behaving.
I don't stay out late, don't care to go. I'm home about it, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Ain't misbehaving, saving.